All right, law students, ever think about how the US first stepped onto like the world stage of international law? We're going deep today on a case from 1784 that really set the stage, Respublica v. de Longchamp.
This case, it's a great look into how a state court, right after the revolution, wrestled with what we now consider, international law basics. Philadelphia back then, it was a hub for diplomacy.
So this deep dive, it's all about this early American legal battle over breaking what they called the law of nations.
Yeah, a new country figuring out its global role. Think about it. War's over, the U.S. is brand new on the scene, relationships with other countries, they're super important.
And in the thick of it, we have our main players: Charles Julien de Longchamp, French citizen, and Francis Barbier Marbois, he was the French consul general.
And their interactions, they spark some big legal questions for a Pennsylvania court. We're talking heated words, a physical fight. It's a real example of a state court tackling something that today, well, it might be federal right off the bat.
Okay, let's break this down. First scene, what happened between de Longchamp and Barbier Marbois?
First clash was May 17, 1784, at the French minister's residence in Philadelphia. De Longchamp goes after Barbier Marbois with words, strong language, all in French.
Oh, wow. What'd he say?
He said, "Je vous déshonorerai, polissant coquin," which from French to English means, "I will dishonor you, scoundrel, villain."
Not very diplomatic. And that location, the French minister's place, that's important, right? For international law, I mean.
Totally. Under the law of nations, a diplomat's house is almost like their country's territory. So, threats there, that's diplomatic inviolability, front and center, a big deal.
Right, tensions rising. But this wasn't the end, was it? What about the second incident?
It escalated, yeah. Just 2 days later, May 19th, same year. This time, it's on a public street in Philly. De Longchamp goes after Barbier Marbois physically.
How'd that start?
Witnesses said De Longchamp hit Barbier Marbois' cane. Then, well, it became a full-on fight.
So, threats in a diplomatic safe zone, then a public attack. This must raise some huge legal issues for the young U.S. What did the Pennsylvania court have to figure out?
A lot of issues, yeah. Biggest one. Did what De Longchamp's do? The words and the attack, did that break the law of nations? Was that even a thing back then?
Okay, huge question. What else?
They had to decide if Pennsylvania, back then, had the power to actually prosecute someone for violating the law of nations. Was this a future federal government thing, or could a state court handle it? Remember, the U.S. was new, states had a lot of legal power, and international law, it was seen as part of state law, their municipal law, which might give state courts the right to act.
So a state court dealing with something international makes sense, given how they saw the law back then. And the third issue was what to do with de Longchamp if he was guilty, right?
Exactly. Could he be sent to France for punishment, which is probably what they wanted, since the victim was their consul general? Or could he be locked up forever, at France's request?
Tough questions for a new nation. How did the court approach all this? What legal ideas did they use?
Diplomatic inviolability, that's the key. It's a core idea in international law. Diplomats, they're official reps of their country, they get protection and respect. This covers not just them personally, but their official home and even their staff.
So those insults at the minister's residence, that went against this whole idea, right?
Exactly. Chief Justice McKeon, he said something powerful. An attack on a diplomat, it's not just against that person, it's a crime against the whole world. It disrespects the foreign country and threatens how countries relate to each other.
Strong words. A crime against the whole world. They weren't messing around. And you said the law of nations wasn't some abstract thing for them.
Right. They decided it was woven into Pennsylvania's own law. Before the U.S. Constitution was in full swing, states had lots of power. International law was part of common law, which a lot of states used. So enforcing international law was like enforcing their own law.
That explains why a state court felt they could act. It wasn't separate, but part of their system, and that's why they felt they had the authority to get involved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They knew they had to uphold these international rules so the new country could work with others and earn respect globally. And the French minister's house had that special status, making those initial threats even worse.
Okay, so they established that de Longchamp broke the law of nations, Pennsylvania could prosecute. But what about France wanting him extradited or jailed indefinitely?
Here's where they drew a line. They said no to handing him over to France or keeping him locked up just because the French king wanted it.
Why? Were they worried about damaging their relationship with France, who was a big ally?
It wasn't about upsetting France. It was about Pennsylvania's own legal system. They said they couldn't give up their power on punishment. Any sentence had to have an end date and follow Pennsylvania law, not be controlled by another country.
So balancing upholding international rules with their own state's power, tricky. What was the final verdict? What was de Longchamp's sentence?
He got a fine, 100 French crowns. Plus, about 2 years in prison until July 4, 1786, specifically. And a 7-year good behavior bond, where he had to behave himself around public officials, consuls, and Pennsylvania citizens.
Punishment under Pennsylvania law, not extradition or indefinite detention. A statement about limits on foreign influence on U.S. law, even way back then.
Yes, de Longchamp showed that early U.S. state courts could enforce international law, a key step in how the new nation would deal with the world legally.
And this wasn't just a one-off, right? It affected the U.S. legal system long-term.
It did. Many think Respublica Vita Longchamp's influenced the Law of Nations Clause in the U.S. Constitution. That's Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10, giving Congress the power to define and punish crimes against international law. Yeah. So you see a progression from states doing it out of necessity to a federal system being better for these big international issues in the long run.
Wow, a local dispute in Philly shaping how the U.S. handles foreign relations.
It showed how important a unified approach to international law is, and the problems with relying only on state courts for these sensitive matters.
So for any future lawyers listening, what are the big takeaways from Respublica Vita Longchamp?
A few things. One, it shows how early on the U.S. recognized international law, even at the state level before the Constitution.
Number two,
it emphasizes diplomatic inviolability, how seriously they took protecting foreign diplomats for world peace and good relations.
And the third key point,
it shows the balance between upholding international rules and respecting state power back then. Pennsylvania enforced international law, but wouldn't give up its own power on punishment.
And lastly,
this case helped shift power to the federal government in foreign affairs. It showed the need for a national system to handle crimes against international law, which is reflected in the Constitution.
This deep dive's been eye-opening. Amazing how these early legal challenges shaped the U.S. and the world of international law. Thanks for breaking down Respublica Vita Longchamp so well.
Glad to do it. It's a case that still teaches us about how international law works in the U.S. system.
And for you listening, think about this. How has the relationship between international and domestic law changed over the centuries since de Longchamp? And what new challenges might test these basic principles we talked about? Lots to think about. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.